This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
The Shape of Water wins big. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Monday, March 5th. Glad you're with us. Here's what's up this hour.
At the 90th Academy Awards, The Shape of Water captured Best Picture and Guillermo del Toro won as its director.
The Trump administration is pushing back against critics of proposed tariffs on steel and aluminum imports.
Lost in much of the opioid discussions, how little children are getting sick by stumbling upon their parents' drugs.
And lessons we can learn from Warren Buffett about how not to sell your home.
So the big problem here, according to experts, is that he's overpriced the listing. You know, when you look at comparable figures, his home is priced much higher, especially when you take into account that while the property is in very good condition, he hasn't made some of the upgrades.
Market Watch reporter Jacob Passy on why Mr. Buffett's home won't sell. He's here in about 20 minutes. Not many surprises at the Academy Awards. The Shape of Water won Best Picture at the 90th awards ceremony last night. Guillermo del Toro also won for Best Director for the movie, a love story about a mute woman and an amphibious creature. Other big winners included Best Picture nominees, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, Get Out, Call Me By Your Name, and Darkest Hour. In fact, Gary Oldman won Best Actor for Darkest Hour and gave a shout-out to his mother, who soon turns 99.
Thank you for your love and support. Put the kettle on. I'm bringing Oscar home.
Frances McDormand won Best Actress for Three Billboards. Former Los Angeles Lakers star Kobe Bryant won an Oscar for the animated short film he wrote called Dear Basketball.
I feel better than winning a championship, to be honest with you. I swear I do.
Where the racism-themed horror movie Get Out won Best Original Screenplay. Trump administration officials are pushing back against critics who don't like proposed tariffs on imports of steel and aluminum. Manufacturing executives who use the metals to make things like beer cans, cars, and refrigerators warn of price surges, shortages, and retaliatory trade barriers on U.S. exports if the administration follows through on the plan. On the Sunday TV talk shows, supporters said the U.S. would apply steel and aluminum barriers expansively, leaving no country exempt. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross was on ABC's This Week.
The total amount of tariffs we're putting on is about $9 billion in a year. That's a fraction of 1% of the economy. So the notion that it would destroy a lot of jobs, raise prices, disrupt things is wrong.
The European Union is threatening to impose penalties on $3.5 billion of U.S. exports, including bourbon, denim, and Harley-Davidson's. The proposal, announced Thursday by President Trump, would include 25% tariffs on imported steel and 10% duties on aluminum imports. Italy faces a prolonged period of political instability after voters delivered a hung parliament in yesterday's election, turning their backs on the traditional parties while choosing anti-establishment and far-right groups in record numbers. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Reuters says it looks almost certain that none of Italy's three main factions would be able to rule alone. Scenarios now include the creation of a coalition more skeptical of Europe, or a quick new election to try to break the deadlock. Despite overseeing a modest economic recovery, the ruling center-left coalition finished far back in third place, hit by widespread anger over persistent poverty, high unemployment, and an influx of more than 600,000 migrants over the past 4 years. Final results are expected later today. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. It's 10 minutes now after the hour. On this morning, America's First News. Support for This Morning with Gordon Deal comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. With Rocket Mortgage, you can apply simply and understand fully so you can mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Gordon. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030.
Look into any great business, whether it's a manufacturer or a hotel, a store, school, or hospital. Look into each and every one of them and you'll find the same thing. Great people. At Kronos, we believe that great businesses are powered by great people. And with Kronos Workforce Solutions, we'll help you find them, keep them, and engage them. Learn more at Kronos.com. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Monday. After getting burned during the financial crisis, everyday investors say they gave up on trying to time the market. What's different this time? More from Wall Street Journal reporter Christina Rexrode, who's been sampling investor sentiment. Christina, what are you hearing?
February was a pretty volatile month for stocks, and you know, they went way down at the beginning of February, and they recovered some of that. And this is quite a jolt for people who are sort of used to the stock market steadily going up, which is what it's been doing for the past few years. So when we start doing the story, we kind of thought we were going to write a story about people running for the exits and saying, you know what, I've had enough of this, I'm going to take my gains while I can. Mm-hmm. But what we found generally was that it wasn't necessarily that people were really excited about the stock market, but just that they would rather be in than out. Like that they had a fear of the stocks going down again, yeah. But they have a bigger fear that stocks are going to go up,
really?
And they're going to miss out.
There was someone you quoted in the story who said something along the lines of they sold in 2017 because they were concerned about the Trump presidency.
So we talked to, and not all these people are in the story, but we actually talked to multiple people who have tried to beat the market in the past. I know that I talked to two people who said that they had sold a bunch of stocks when Trump became president, just thinking that the market was going to go down. And I think we talked to at least one person who sold a bunch of stocks in 2008 during the market crash. Those people are not happy that they did that. They missed out on run-ups later on. So they've sort of taken this view. And it's also a broader view across the investing world now to no longer try to beat the market, no longer try to pick stocks, but to just sort of invest passively.
Yeah. You wrote, too, that although institutional investors dominate stock trading, how individual investors react to market moves is important for overall market sentiment. Can you explain that?
It's true that most of the trading is done by these big firms, but you know, a lot of stocks are important to a lot of regular Americans too. Now, not everybody holds stocks, but a lot of people do, maybe more than you think, because people have 401ks or people have, you know, 529s where they're saving money for their kids' account, or they might work for a company that gives them stock in the employer. So how they view the market also affects the market.
Yeah, interesting. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Christina Rexrode. She's written a piece entitled, "If You Didn't Sell Stocks This Month, You've Probably Got FOMO," which is the acronym for fear of missing out. How different, by the way, is right now from, say, 2008 and how people are thinking about the market?
Well, this is quite different from 2008. We wrote stories in 2008 about people running for the doors, getting out of stocks, and that was a scary time through the beginning of 2009. But people have said that 2008 feels different than the current volatility. You have to remember that in 2008, there were banks that were disappearing overnight, and there were a lot of Wall Street scandals. I mean, Bernie Madoff is a really good example, right? When something like that happens, that can make people lose faith in just the idea of investing or putting their money in the market.
You said, too, over the past decade, investors have veered from active stock picking to passive investing, meaning what?
So when you're actively picking stocks, it's sort of this exercise in conceit, right? It's thinking that you know what's going to happen in the future. And that is sort of a, at times has been sort of a cool thing to try to do. And there are people who do it and make a lot of money at it. But there are also a lot of people who have lost their shirts over it.
Thanks, Christina. It's Wall Street Journal reporter Christina Rexroad. This portion of the program is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you currently hiring? Well, maybe your current strategy is posting your position to job sites and waiting and continuing to wait for the right people to see it. That's, of course, not efficient use of your time or resources. ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. They learn what you're looking for, identify people with the right experience, and invite them to apply to your job. These invitations, by the way, have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just a single day. Now that's efficiency. To try it, post a job for free right now at ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. The free offer for our listeners is at ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. Again, it's free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. See if you can land your qualified candidate in just 24 hours. ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. Your free trial at ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Again, ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the Cold War fantasy film The Shape of Water is the winner of the Best Picture Academy Award. Director Guillermo del Toro's film received a leading 13 nominations for this year's Oscars and won 4 categories last night, including Best Director.
Everyone that is dreaming of a parable, of using genre fantasy to tell the stories about the things that are real in the world today, you can do it. This is a door. Kick it open and come in.
Frances McDormand's portrayal of a mother seeking justice for her murdered daughter in 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri won Best Actress, while Gary Oldman's transformation into Winston Churchill for Darkest Hour won him the Best Actor Award. President Trump is embracing the potential for a trade war after announcing his intent to place tariffs on imported steel and aluminum as he rebuffs allies who have pushed to be exempted from the stiff duties. The administration defended the protectionist policy from critics in Washington and overseas. One of those critics is Maine Senator Angus King, who appeared on NBC.
You want to do these kinds of things with a scalpel, not a chainsaw.
Yesterday, Trump tweeted that American steel and aluminum industries are dead. Sorry, it's time for a change. On the East Coast, at least 750,000 people are still without power after a powerful nor'easter blew through the area over the weekend. Schoharie County, New York, got up to 3 feet of snow.
Day before yesterday, it was about 50 degrees, and then we got more than I've seen in years.
In Massachusetts, some areas were so badly damaged that entire sections of the electrical system are being rebuilt. In Britain, tens of thousands of households are suffering water supply problems after pipes burst when snow thawed and normal weather conditions returned to the country. The worst snowstorms in nearly 30 years had frozen water in pipes last week during a blast of Siberian cold dubbed the Beast from the East, which ground planes, stopped trains, blocked roads, and shut schools. And House of Cards has a new chief, and she's ready for duty. Netflix dropped the first promo for the 6th and final season of its political drama with star Robin Wright front and center. Netflix cut ties with former star Kevin Spacey in November after he was accused of sexual misconduct. House of Cards returns in the fall.
Very good. Hey, by the way, with regards to the storm,
yes,
do you get the sense that, like, in the middle part of New Jersey where we are, we were surrounded by it but never hit by it?
Oh, I was hit. I broke.
You were hit?
My porch door broke and my fence fell down in the backyard.
Wow.
I've got a lot of damage
in
my house.
No kidding. I felt like it just, like, operated in cells, it seemed, at
times. It was
awful.
Man. Terrible, terrible.
Thank you, Jen. It's 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Homeowners on the West Coast typically won't have much trouble offloading their properties in today's market unless, apparently, they're Warren Buffett. Market Watch reporter Jacob Passy has lessons we can learn on what not to do when selling a home from the iconic investor and CEO of Berkshire Hathaway. Jacob, set this up.
Warren Buffett is trying to sell one of his properties in Laguna Beach, California. It's in a gated community called Emerald Bay. He bought it back in 1971, and he put it on the market a year ago for $11 million,
wow,
but has not been able to sell it as of yet.
Mm. What's the problem?
So the big problem here, according to experts that I spoke with and that my colleague spoke with, is that he's overpriced the listing. You know, when you look at comparable figures, his home is priced much higher, especially when you take into account that while the property is in very good condition, he hasn't made some of the upgrades that folks expect from properties in that area. The look of the home, while it's definitely a gorgeous home, it's not, you know, necessarily on trend in terms of the stylings. So so all those factors kind of made it, have been making it hard for him to sell it.
We're speaking with MarketWatch personal finance reporter Jacob Passy. He's written an interesting piece entitled "Warren Buffett is Having Trouble Selling His Home: How to Avoid That Same Fate." You mentioned, too, that you should not expect prospective buyers to have too much imagination, meaning what?
Well, you know, they have a hard time picturing a space as it will look like, you know, when they're living in it. You know, you don't want it to be empty, and that's why home staging can be important, because it's a little hard for buyers to picture, you know, their own furniture in a home. So
yeah,
you want to stay on, you know, you want to look at what similar homes look like in terms of what paint colors they use, you know, what furnishings they have, and you want to try and match that as much as you can, so that way buyers can more easily compare it to their own home and compare it to the other homes in the area.
What about the benefits of underpricing here?
Yeah, so when it comes to setting a list price, you know, especially in a competitive market, it can sometimes pay to underlist, because you'll get the psychological benefit of appearing like the property is a bargain. And when that happens, you know, that will attract more potential buyers. And experts I spoke with said that can lead them into a bidding war, which can ultimately drive the price either to match or possibly even exceed the average price in the area. And then you're also avoiding, you know, the negative psychological impact of overpricing, where people, you know, get weary of the price. You know, they don't see it matching with what they've come to expect, and
yeah,
they can sometimes even hold out expecting you to drop the price. But if it's already under market, the market's average value, then they're going to see that as a deal they can't afford to miss.
Thanks, Jacob. MarketWatch reporter Jacob Passy. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well with the username @GordonDeal. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter @ThisMorningShow. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. ThisMorning@CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday, March 5. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. The Shape of Water won Best Picture at the Oscars last night. The Florida Senate today considers a program to arm teachers. Delegations from North and South Korea meet today. The staggering number of children sickened by their parents' prescription drugs. Ferrari unveils the new 488 Pista today at the Geneva Motor Show, most powerful V8 in its history. And employees who stand by decisions to get tattoos of their company name or logo. That story in about 20 minutes.
And the Oscar goes to The Shape of Water.
The Academy Awards are meant to be a love fest celebrating the very best Hollywood has to offer, but the disconnect between its 7,000 or so voters and the movie-going public signals the love-hate relationship the film industry has with its audiences and even itself. Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Fritz says the result is that the most prestigious movie prize there is has become increasingly irrelevant. Ben, what's going on?
It's really striking. I was looking at the data, and you know, I hadn't quite realized this. Between 1983 and 2005, so that's 20 plus years there, 22 years. Every single Best Picture winner was among the top 25 releases that year. So they were all movies that a lot of people had seen. In the 12 years since then, only four of them have been.
Wow.
You know, think about movies. You know, it started with Crash in 2006. It was number 49, and you go on from there. And this year, most people think it's The Shape of Water, which is the 50th most seen movie this year at the box office. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri is number 55. The only one that even gets remotely high is Get Out, which is number 15, which has a shot. But certainly nothing in the top 10 or the top few. And think about it, you know, again, in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, it wasn't that common to see movies like The Lord of the Rings, Forrest Gump, Terms of Endearment, Rain Man that were number one or number two.
Yeah. So what's going on here then?
You know, I think what's really happening is that the movie business is changing. It's not like Oscar voters have suddenly fallen out of touch with America. That wouldn't make sense why that would suddenly happen, right? But what is happening is that the movie business has become so obsessed with franchises, branded films, your Marvel movies, your Star Wars, your Fast and Furious, and so on. And those are the films audiences, especially global audiences, prefer. And those branded franchise films are consistently the top 10. Those are the movies we all go out and see. Mm. You know, Black Panther just being the most recent example, the most recent Marvel blockbuster. Those are not the movies that Oscar voters like to give awards to, even when they're good. You know, even Wonder Woman, which was a lot of people liked, nominated this year. The Oscar voters, I think they want to give awards to the kind of movies that they want to be making, that they imagine themselves to be in the business of making, which are these mid-budget kind of dramas, interesting original films for adults. But they don't make very many of them anymore, and those are not the films that top the box office. So there's sort of this disconnect between the version of themselves Academy voters want to present to the world and the reality of the movie business today.
Wow. So Hollywood, well, I'll say the Academy then is looking for something a little more creative and not returning to, I don't know, you know, what a top 40 radio station would call playing the hits.
Yes, they are. But what's interesting is, you know, again, 20, 30, 40 years ago, there wasn't such a disparity. The movies that succeeded at the box office were also the movies that we would say are interesting, original, kind of quirky.
Yeah.
You know, that's what people went to movie theaters for. But now we get that on television, right? TV is where we get our original dramas. And film, the movie theater is where we go for kind of our big branded sequels and spectacles. That's what movies have largely become for most people. But that's not what Oscar voters want them to be.
Well, we're talking with Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Fritz. He covers Hollywood. He's also got a new book coming out called The Big Picture, The Fight for the Future of Movies. We're talking about how the gap is widening between the movies that win the Academy Awards and the ones that we go to see the most at the movies. Well, what kind of role has Netflix, I think, had in all this? I think you alluded to it a little bit there.
Sure. So Netflix is only going to make this, you know, disparity greater, I think, at least in terms of the movies that are popular. Netflix is aggressively moving into the film business. They're making a lot of movies. And, you know, those movies get very limited theatrical releases, if any. And Oscar voters, they have mixed feelings at best about this, right? A lot of them believe movies are made to be seen in movie theaters. So the more the movie business goes towards this Netflix model, where it's simultaneously available to watch at home, the more there's going to be films that people love and are talking about that aren't getting Oscar nominations, I think. So, it's probably going to put the Oscars even more out of touch with a movie-going public.
Wow. Do you see that changing, by the way?
Do I see this trend changing? I don't. I think Oscar voters, you know, are really resistant to the big branded franchise films. The membership of the Academy that votes for the Oscars is, you know, getting younger. It's getting refreshed. They're trying to let in a lot more younger members in order to diversify their audience. It'll be interesting to see if that has an impact in the years to come. I mean, it'll be a great question. Next year, will Black Panther be a nominee? I mean, this is a film that got near perfect reviews, pretty universally acclaimed, also a massive global hit. It's a superhero movie. It's a superhero movie. So are the Oscar voters going to nominate a superhero film? If they won't nominate Black Panther, it's hard to imagine what they would.
Thanks, Ben. It's Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Fritz, who covers Hollywood. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Welcome into Monday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, something besides politics had some people in the Washington metro area getting queasy on Friday. You've heard about the powerful storm that hit the East Coast on Friday, but that not only caused plenty of problems for people on the ground, but for the unfortunate people who were in the air as well. One plane landing at Dulles International Airport outside D.C. during the heavy winds reported that nearly everyone on the flight had lost their lunch or whatever else they were eating. The National Weather Service's Aviation Weather Center tweeted out some of the play-by-play as told to them by one of the pilots of United Flight 3833 from Charlottesville, Virginia to D.C., where everyone on the plane was getting sick and even the pilots were on the verge.
Really?
Yeah. I'm going to imagine, I don't know what type of plane this was, but from Charlottesville to D.C., that's a very short trip.
Yeah.
I'm guessing this is a very small plane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So I'm guessing, you know, more susceptible, obviously, to turbulence and getting tossed about in a situation like that.
Especially that weather.
Yes.
And the wind.
Right.
Oh, boy.
And you mentioned you knew somebody who took like 12 hours for them to, to make that trip basically by car.
A friend of mine was went to pick up her daughter at Catholic University.
Yeah.
The trip back from Washington, D.C. to New Jersey, which should be three and a half.
Right.
Took 11 and a half. Because they were constantly routed onto side roads to try to avoid downed trees and such.
Right.
It's incredible.
And I heard from somebody who had a similar situation. Took him, I think, like 15 hours or something to make a similar trip because they kept closing bridges all along
the
way.
Because
of high winds,
right?
So they kept closing bridges. So, like, you know, the bridge he was going to would be closed. It would be parking lot. Everyone would have to turn around. They'd go to another bridge. Then that one would be closed. It would be just one bridge after another kept closing.
Unbelievable. but that feeling when you're in the air.
Oh, yeah.
Now, they probably weren't at 35,000 feet because it wasn't that long of a trip from Virginia to D.C.
That's part of the problem, probably, too, is you're not flying above the weather.
You can't go above it.
Yes.
But, that with everybody sick, what a miserable flight. Oh, it would take me months to get back in a plane, I think.
Yeah, most of them probably staying home from work today again.
Right.
And something stinks, Gordon, in one southeastern New Mexico town, and residents want police on the case. Albuquerque TV says a skunk smell is plaguing the town of Hagerman, New Mexico, thanks to a mild winter that is bringing out the smelly animals early. Viola Badcock, the owner of the Hagerman Township Animal Shelter, says the annoying animals are hanging in town and are generally not healthy. I mean, skunk bad enough, but unhealthy skunk, that's probably 10 times worse. She says their stink appears to be a growing problem. Hagerman police said they are setting up traps around town and in nearby Lake Arthur and Dexter. Any healthy skunks caught in the traps will be relocated on the east side of town near a river.
Mm.
And that's the healthy animals. Again, there's some
the unhealthy skunks will be actually relocated in the river.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
pretty
what's
much.
Happening there.
Yeah, that's what they're not saying there.
Right.
But those skunks don't have much longer to live, I don't think.
Wow. Thank you, Mike. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for three straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in defense, cybersecurity, mobility, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan among the top 10 states in the country for business. To learn more, visit michiganbusiness.org. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. The number of children admitted to hospitals for opioid overdose has nearly doubled since 2004. A new study published today in the journal Pediatrics found that the number of children admitted to hospitals for opioid overdose was about 1,504 patients between 2012 and 2015. CNN says the researchers cautioned that many of these children likely overdosed after stumbling upon their parents' prescription medications. A lead author of the study says when they come in, the kids are going to fall into one of two categories. Either they're teenagers with intentional or drug-seeking behavior, or they're kids who got into their parents' meds. He said one of the shocking findings was that in the youngest children, those under 6 years of age, 20% of the ingestions were of methadone. He says you sort of have to ask yourself, where are they getting all this methadone from? Methadone is prescribed for the treatment of opioid withdrawal symptoms and also as a painkiller. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the Academy Awards attempted to celebrate its storied history and also atone for some of the film industry's mistreatment of women and other groups. Nostalgia, Me Too, and last year's mistaken envelope fiasco factored in heavily during last night's star-studded show, which gave its top honor to the fantasy romance The Shape of Water and let Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty have a redo presenting the Best Picture Award. In his opening monologue, Jimmy Kimmel joked about last year's gaffe.
This year, when you hear your name called, don't get up right away.
Frances McDormand won Best Actress for Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Gary Oldman won Best Actor for Darkest Hour. The union representing West Virginia teachers says its strike, begun February 22nd, will extend at least through today, if not longer, after the state Senate failed to pass the raise teachers are holding out for, striking teacher Tanya McKinney.
I love my students. I will do anything to help them, but I cannot live on $800 a month.
Governor Jim Justice and the Republican-led House of Delegates had agreed to a 5% raise teachers are demanding, but Saturday night Senate votes ran into a problem after the Finance Committee prepared to pass a 4% raise. A rival pair of populist and stridently anti-European Union political forces surged in Italy's parliamentary election, but preliminary results show neither gained enough support to govern the country alone. With no faction winning a clear majority, the results confirmed the negotiations to form a new government that can win a confidence vote in parliament will be difficult. For now, a drought won't be declared in California following a massive snowfall in the Sierra Nevadas. The storm piled snow by the foot in the mountains, forcing the Department of Water Resources to postpone its measurement for a few days. Runoff from melted snow through the spring historically supplies Californians with one-third of their water. Well, March Madness is underway as Michigan repeated as Big Ten tournament champs. Greg Daniels had the call on Compass Media Networks as the Wolverines down Purdue 75-66 in the title game played yesterday at Madison Square Garden.
3 seconds. Two. And the Michigan Wolverines will hear hail to the victors again. Back-to-back tourney champions on the East Coast.
Michigan will enter the NCAA tournament on a 9-game winning streak.
Oh, they were good. I watched some of that yesterday.
Yeah.
How about that dude from Purdue? He's like 8'5". Nobody can stop him. Haas, but I don't
great
know.
Great game.
Michigan
very
found
fun in New York. People were against it, but it turned out great.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. While job hopping is rampant, a surprising number of American workers are expressing a bond with their employers in permanent ink. The Wall Street Journal says employees at places like Red Hat and Nike have brand logos plastered on their ankles, shoulders, and arms. Some at first feel sheepish outside the office. Mark Daly, media director at Anytime Fitness, said he hid his tattoo from his wife Laura for 3 days before confessing. She called her husband a knucklehead. In 2014, the former New York Times executive editor Jill Abramson, for her 60th birthday, memorialized her nearly two-decade career at the newspaper. It was a letter T in the signature font tattooed on her back. No regrets when she was fired 2 months later. And 40-year-old Mahadeva Matmani got one on a company retreat for his firm, Booz & Company, when it was announced it was being purchased by PricewaterhouseCoopers. Younger employees at the firm were impressed with the older guy's tattoo. He got a strong reception. Not so at home, though, where his younger son called him an idiot. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.